companion for her. He was an auburn-haired boy with great, handsome eyes, which he would grow up to in time, a facile, imaginative mind, and a taste for fancy dress. From his 4th to his 10th year, he did the country with his mother in her father's private car, from Coronado, where his mother became so bored that she had a nervous breakdown in a fashionable hotel, down to Mexico City, where she took a mild, almost epidemic consumption. This trouble pleased her, and later she made use of it as an intrinsic part of her atmosphere, especially after several astounding braces. So, while more or less fortunate little rich boys were defying governesses on the beach at Newport, or being spanked or tutored or read to from Do and Dare or Frank on the Mississippi, Amory was biting acquiescent bellboys in the Waldorf, outgrowing a natural repugnance to chamber music and symphonies, and deriving a highly specialized education from his mother.
Amory!
Yes, Beatrice? Such a quaint name for his mother. She encouraged it.
Dear, don't think of getting out of bed yet. I've always suspected that early rising in early life makes one nervous. Clotilde is having your breakfast brought up.
All right.
I am feeling very old today, Amory,
she would sigh, her face a rare cameo of pathos, her voice exquisitely modulated, her hands as facile as Bernhardt's.
My nerves are on edge. On edge. We must leave this terrifying place tomorrow and go searching for sunshine.
Amory's penetrating green eyes would look out through tangled hair at his mother. Even at this age, he had no illusions about her.
Amory.
Oh, yes?
I want you to take a red-hot bath, as hot as you can bear it, and just relax your nerves. You can read in the tub if you wish.
She fed him sections of the Fates Gallants before he was 10. At 11, he could talk glibly, if rather reminiscently, of Brahms and Mozart and Beethoven. One afternoon, when left alone in the hotel at Hot Springs, he sampled his mother's apricot cordial, and as the taste pleased him, he became quite tipsy. This was fun for a while, but he essayed a cigarette in his exultation and succumbed to a vulgar, plebeian reaction. Though this incident horrified Beatrice, it also secretly amused her and became part of what in a later generation would have been termed her line.
This son of mine,
he heard her tell a room full of awestruck admiring women one day,
is entirely sophisticated and quite charming, but delicate. We're all delicate. Here, you know?
Her hand was radiantly outlined against her beautiful bosom. Then, sinking her voice to a whisper, she told them of the apricot cordial. They rejoiced, for she was a brave raconteuse, but many were the keys turned in sideboard locks that night, against the possible defection of little Bobby or Barbara. These domestic pilgrimages were invariably in state. Two maids, the private car, or Mr. Blaine when available, and very often a physician. When Amory had the whooping cough, four disgusted specialists glared at each other hunched around his bed. When he took scarlet fever, the number of attendants, including physicians and nurses, totaled 14. However, blood being thicker than broth, he was pulled through. The Blaines were attached to no city. They were the Blaines of Lake Geneva. They had quite enough relatives to serve in place of friends, and an enviable standing from Pasadena to Cape Cod. But Beatrice grew more and more prone to like only new acquaintances, as there were certain stories, such as the history of her constitution and its many amendments, memories of her years abroad, that it was necessary for her to repeat at regular intervals. Like Freudian dreams, they must be thrown off, else they would sweep in and lay siege to her nerves. But Beatrice was critical about American women, especially the floating population of ex-Westerners.
They have accents, my dear,
she told Amory.
Not southern accents or Boston accents, not an accent attached to any locality, just an accent.
She became dreamy.
They pick up old moth-eaten London accents that are down on their luck and have to be used by someone. They talk as an English butler might after several years in a Chicago grand opera company.
She became almost incoherent.
Suppose time in every Western woman's life. She feels her husband is prosperous enough for her to have accent. They try to impress me, my dear.
Though she thought of her body as a mass of frailties, she considered her soul quite as ill and therefore important in her life. She had once been a Catholic, but discovered